Welcome to the world of Mark's Money Mind, coming to you from the Rocky Mountain town of Crested Butte, Colorado. I am your host, Mark Troutman, CFP. This educational, personal finance show combines money lessons, timely topics, personal stories, and community wisdom to help listeners and viewers master their finances to enjoy a stress-free life of financial freedom. Given that this is the last episode of the month, we are going to do another monthly mailbag episode. But first, I want to fill you in on some big news for me. I have decided to sell my home. It actually was listed as of Friday. There's been a lot of activity. So this backdrop you see behind me, which someone actually emailed and said they thought it was a Zoom background. No, it's real. That is my real living room. So you may not see this backdrop in the future. I certainly will be here for a number of more episodes, but I will be moving. And then the question is, where to? So my plan at this point is to move to Longmont, Colorado, which is kind of the epicenter of the FI/FIRE community, financial independence. I have a lot of friends there, a really good social network, so I've decided to relocate there primarily for that purpose. It would be great if they all moved here and we could establish that here, but I understand that that's, you know, not possible. Things are a little more expensive where I live here in Crested Butte. The other thing I am considering doing, and I have some leads on this, is to have a small place here, a rental that I can come back to and still enjoy Crested Butte. So you may see some of these recordings from either Longmont or Crested Butte, depending on where I am at the time of the recording. So I just kind of wanted to fill you in on that. I certainly will give you some updates as I move forward with the progress of the sale and my move and all those things. So a lot of big changes coming down the road. So I just wanted to fill you in on that. And let's go to listener questions. I have two emails that I'm going to reply to. They're both anonymous, and I'm going to paraphrase a little bit. So let's start with the first one here. And like I said, this is from Anonymous, and it says, "Hello, Mark. Thank you for all the great work on the podcast. You are helping many of us become more financially literate." And then in big, bold letters, it says, "I appreciate your thoroughness and clear responses to help answer listener questions." Well, thank you very much for that. I really appreciate that. That makes it all the worthwhile to do this podcast. This is just kind of a way to give back for me. I'm not monetizing. In fact, it costs me some money to produce this show, although I do most of it myself, but there's hosting and editing software and things like that. This is my way of giving back. So when I get responses like that, it just gives me the confidence to continue. And I'm so glad that I'm helping out others. And that's my goal with this podcast. So let me read the bulk of the email here. It says, "My question for you is about the specific order you could help walk through for contributing towards a Roth versus traditional account for a scenario like ours that would help create the least amount of taxes owed. A little background. My wife and I are in our mid-30s, debt-free, other than the home, have a full emergency fund in fairly decent financial shape." Well, awesome. That is great news. Mid-30s sounds like you're killing it. So I think that's awesome. The next sentence mentions the annual income. I don't think I need to divulge that necessarily, but it says that they are in the 22% tax bracket. And it gives a total taxable income after the standard deduction. And then it continues, "We see these next handful of years as our peak earning years and likely not moving up in the tax brackets. We're trying to front load retirement now to be able to slow down a bit in our 40s and 50s. That's a key item in what we're going to talk about here. And then the next paragraph goes, "For retirement, we have a pension that takes a small percentage out of each paycheck. After that, we have the options of a 401k with no match or a Roth option and 457 plans, both traditional or Roth. It says they have about $150,000 combined in these retirement accounts, roughly half in the pension. Our current method is maxing out our Roth IRAs and then contributing towards our Roth 457s, putting away about $22,000 total each between the IRA and the 457. We are wondering if it makes sense from a tax perspective after we max out our Roth IRAs to then contribute towards the traditional 457 only up to the point where we would lower our current tax rate to the 12% and then contribute the rest towards the Roth 457. Taxes are an area we seem to struggle with a bit more to gauge, so any thoughts you have to share on this would be deeply appreciated. Again, thank you for submitting this question. And the way I would like to respond to this is thinking about how to think about Roth versus traditional. And in recent episodes, one with Emma von Wiese, and the most recent episode where we had Sean Mullaney on as part of the panel at the CAMPFI Week 2, we talked a little bit about a Roth versus traditional. And both of them had some very good points, and I think they come at it from a little different perspective. So I want to share those with you and everyone, and also how I think about it. So really the crux of the question, Roth versus traditional, is it more advantageous to pay at the current tax rate, or is it more advantageous to take a deduction today and pay at a tax rate undetermined in the future, but using current guidelines or current tax law to determine what that may be in the future? Some people take the approach that, well, I know what the tax rate is today. As long as I'm not in a significantly high tax rate, maybe I just go ahead and pay it today, and I've got a known tax amount to pay on these contributions, and they're going to grow tax-free forever, and I'd rather just go ahead and pay it because today's rate is reasonable in that person's case, for example. Sean had a very interesting approach. He said he likes people to go ahead and take the tax deduction today because you're taking it at your marginal tax rate. So in this case, it would be at the 22% rate. So you're deferring effectively or avoiding paying 22%. And then when you potentially retire early, and you mentioned front loading the retirement now to be able to slow down a bit in our 40s and 50s. So potentially having lower income. And you also mentioned that your current income now is potentially your peak earnings years. You could defer now at, you know, and effectively save 22% with the expectation that you can either do conversions, or in the case of a 457, we've talked about these before, where if you separate from service, you can take distributions from a 457, typically the government 457 plans. Once you separate from service, there's no 10% penalty. So whether it's a distribution or a conversion, and this is what I thought was very interesting that Sean pointed out, you're converting at your effective tax rate. So let's say you retire early, you have no income. Well, any conversions you do, if that's all of your income, the first amount is being converted effectively at the standard deduction amount, which is effectively taxed at zero. And then you might be converting a little bit more and you're pushing into the 10% bracket, and then maybe a little bit more and you're pushing into the 12. But your effective tax rate over the course of all of those three brackets could be, you know, 10%, maybe even less, depending on how much you're converting. So it can make a lot of sense to take the tax deduction now at your marginal rate, which is the rate that your last dollar is taxed, and you could convert later or withdraw from your 457 at your effective tax rate, which is basically the average of all the tax brackets you are converting those dollars or withdrawing those dollars in the future. Now, Emma had a really good point too, but this probably doesn't apply in your case, but she was pointing out that somebody, for example, in their mid-30s, or in her case, in their 20s, would like to put money into Roth with the anticipation of earning more money in the future. So therefore, why not go ahead and get the money into the Roth, not take the tax deduction now, build that up, and then as their income grows in the future, consider deferring at a higher tax bracket in the future. This is not advice. This is just how I would kind of walk through and think about this stuff. It seems like if you're saying that you're thinking about slowing down later in your 40s and 50s, which is very young still, and that you're in your peak earnings years, yeah, it could totally make sense to take the tax deduction now, potentially avoiding paying in the 22% bracket, getting your income down to a level into the 12% bracket. And then if there was room in the 12 to do Roth, yeah, sure, that could make sense. It sounds like you're on track. It sounds like you're thinking about this correctly. So that's how I would go through the exercise. And it really just boils down to, do I want to pay today's marginal tax rate, or do I want to pay the taxes in the future at potentially the effective tax rate, which is the average tax rate across all of the brackets where that money would be coming out of the account. So I think when you just kind of always back up into the idea of looking at it through those two lenses, that usually gives you a good feel as to what makes more sense. And the reality is, we're not going to know what the best decision is until many years down the road when we can look back and say, oh, it was a good idea to have contributed to my Roth back then when my tax rate was X, or vice versa. It was good to have deferred way back when at that high tax rate and convert or pay tax rates now. That was my experience. And I may have mentioned this in the past on this podcast, or it may have been at a campfire. I can't recall. But I looked back to see, yeah, I think it was actually at a campfire presentation I did at Mid-Atlantic. So you may not have heard this on the podcast before, but I looked back to see what my tax rates were when I was deferring all of my retirement contribution into the standard 401k, which is pre-tax. I was working in New York, and we were deferring between state and local at, it was almost 40%. So it was in the high 30% bracket when you consider both federal and state. And today I'm doing conversions, and I even think about when I do conversions, sometimes I even go up to the top of the 24 and I'm like, oh, that's so much money. But then when I go back and look at what I deferred at in the almost 40% bracket, then I'm like, oh, that's not so bad. Actually, I'm ahead. I won the game by doing that. So again, you're never going to know for sure until down the road when you can look back and see what you could have done or what you did do. But I think you're totally on the right track. I think the key components that you mentioned are the tax bracket you're in and the fact that you think you'll be in this bracket or lower in the future. And therefore, if that is truly the case, and again, we don't know what tax rates are going to be in the future, but based on today's information, if that's truly the case, then yeah, it might make sense to defer the amount above the 12 and then, you know, potentially convert a withdrawal at a lower rate or certainly lower than the 22 in the future. And the 22 is going to be 25 in the future. So you do have to take that into account, but we'll see what the election brings and where we actually go with that. I'm not going to game the system on what tax rates may be in the future. We can only go with what we know they are supposed to be. So in 2026, the 12% bracket is going to go to 15. The 22 goes to 25. The 25 goes to 28. So it's scheduled to go up. But both parties have said that they would like to keep the tax rates as they stand for at least the married filing joint category below 400,000 and single category below 200,000. And given the numbers that you mentioned and the tax brackets you're in, that would be your case, for example. But we just don't know if that's going to happen or not. I hope that was helpful. And thank you for submitting the questions. And if you would like to submit a question, you can email it to me, mark@marksmoneymind.com. And as long as I keep getting these questions every month, at least I will try to bring some out on the podcast and answer them. So let's move to the next question. And we only have two this week that I'm going to answer because they're both quite long and And I'm going to keep some of these episodes short for the next couple of weeks because I've got a lot on my plate. And, you know, beyond just recording the episodes, there's editing and things like that. So hopefully that's beneficial as well to you. It's summertime and you probably don't want a big, long 1 hour podcast to have to listen to. So I'm going to try to keep these next few episodes pretty short for you and for me. All right. So the next question, again, an anonymous submission, and I really appreciate these. And I'm so happy to see that people are sending these in and we can talk about it on the podcast. So it says, "Hi, Mark. I've been listening to your podcast as suggested by my dad." Well, thanks, Dad, for suggesting this. It says, "I'm in my 30s, so I'm much younger than your normal demographic, I would assume." Now, I'm going to pause there because actually there are a lot of people in their 20s and 30s listening to this, just going by circumstantial evidence from people who have reached out or I run into at these events and so forth. So we actually do have quite a number of people in your age group. So you are definitely not alone. And then it continues, "But I have been learning a lot. Some of the terminology goes over my head as I am a nurse and you might as well be speaking a foreign language when it comes to finances, taxes, etc. So I will definitely keep that in mind and try to make sure that I'm always explaining certain terminology we use. And yes, I'm kind of treading an interesting dynamic here. We have a number of listeners who are very new to this, and we also have a number of listeners that are well-versed. So I try to go back and forth between, I guess, the difficulty of the topics. I live in a ski town, so I like to think about sometimes we're skiing down green runs, and sometimes we're skiing down black runs, and maybe even double black runs sometimes. So yeah, you're going to hear episodes that kind of run the gamut between easier and much more difficult. Okay, so it continues. "I just listened to episode 10, and there were a few times you mentioned life insurance, and that reminded me I don't really understand how all of that works. I was hoping one day you could do a podcast for us younger people trying to figure out what to enroll in during benefits re-enrollment, October for me, to provide some insight into my situation. I provide the benefits for my family, myself, my husband, 7-year-old, and 4-year-old. Since I work for a major hospital, they have great benefits." Well, that is super awesome. "I have been a nurse for 12 years, and every year I just re-enroll, not truly understanding what I'm enrolling in. My husband and I both work full-time. Just for even more background, I have a 403B. I've been contributing 12% to since I started working and recently increased that to 14%. My employer matches 4%. Wow, combined, that's 18%. And since you've been there 12 years, I'd assume you're probably fully vested. So that's awesome. You're doing a great job there. It continues, "I have a few high-yield savings accounts with Discover. These are my fun buckets." Oh, I love that. That's great. That term is starting to make the rounds here. So I love that. And oh, and it continues, "Although I didn't know that was a real thing until I started listening to your podcast." Well, yes, it is a real thing. And we have a lot of fun talking about the fun bucket. And it continues, "My husband has a Roth IRA and a simple IRA. We have 529s for both kids since their births. And I recently opened both of them Vanguard accounts, trying to build some generational wealth here." Well, wow, you guys are killing it, man. In your 30s and you got all this going on? Wow, that is awesome. This is what I love to hear. Okay, getting back to the email. "Anyways, back to my question. I pay for voluntary long-term disability, voluntary employee life and AD&D, which is accidental death and dismemberment, voluntary spouse life, employee whole life, and spouse whole life. I declined child the whole life. Listing them all out, that seems like a lot. What are these things and do I need them? Neither my husband nor I have any medical diagnoses and my whole family is healthy. I don't want to waste my money and I have no idea what I'm spending my money on. I understand this might not really be relevant to your podcast." Absolutely is relevant. So no worries there. And then it says, "Do you have any podcast recommendations for someone in their 30s looking to reach financial independence or build generational wealth?" I will interject here and say, go back and listen to the episode. I think it's Gen Z whiz Emma Von Wiese. She has some great suggestions for people in your age group to listen to. Of course, I would like you to listen to this podcast, but she also mentioned some others. Money with Katie is one. I think the Money Guy Show was one. And certainly Choose FI, but she mentioned that might be a little bit harder to dive into because there's so many episodes. Those are ones that come to mind, but go back and listen to her episode. And I'll put the link in the show notes because we talked about this quite a bit. And then the email continues and it's almost over here, so bear with me. It says, by the way, the comment in this podcast, money left unspent is life unlived or something to that effect, really resonated with me. I've been raised to be a hardcore saver, but recently I've been wondering if I'm saving too much for later. Side note, when is later? Instead of doing all the things now. Thank you for your time. And again, this is anonymous. All right. Well, that's an awesome email. Again, I'm so happy that people in your age group are listening and getting a lot out of this podcast. And that is truly my goal. When I'm thinking about the audience, I certainly think about my friends and cohorts in the financial independence community. But honestly, I'm really trying to gear this podcast toward this younger generation that you're in to help pay it forward, in essence. And I'm certainly not going to disregard the people that have a lot of knowledge here. And that's why I talk a lot about things that might pertain to them. But you are definitely my target audience. So thank you for sending this in. Let's go to your questions here. First of all, like I said, you guys are killing it. You're doing awesome. You've got all the things in the works and the 529 and the retirement savings and the fund bucket and all that. So I think you're doing great. The Roth IRAs. So getting to the core question, which is your employee benefits. So you mentioned a number of things here, and I'd like to talk about these specifically. You talked about voluntary long-term disability. I think that's a great option because generally it's not too expensive. And that's actually a higher risk than most people think. Effectively, it's if you got disabled in some way and were unable to work, it's going to replace a fairly high percentage of your income, not all of it. I think it's usually like 60 or 80%. You'd have to look at the policy because they don't want to pay out 100% and not have you want to come back to work. But that is a good thing to sign up for, in my opinion. And people who are offered it, I usually say if they ask, does this make sense? I think that's a good one to have. The voluntary employee life and accidental death and disability, which it looks like it might be combined, can usually make sense. And again, it depends on the cost. And sometimes the employer will actually just pay for it. Or if the employee pays, it's nominal. And sometimes it's like a multiple of your salary or it's a stated amount. I know in mine, it was like a multiple of a salary, but not to exceed, I think, $300,000 or something like that. And I had to pay a couple of dollars a paycheck. And I was like, well, that's a nice, easy thing to have. But I'm going to get to whether it makes sense in a moment. And the voluntary spouse life, that's kind of falls in the same category, you know, what is the cost? How much is the coverage and so forth? And then the other two, employee whole life and spouse whole life, those things I usually avoid because whole life is more like permanent insurance and it kind of has a investment component to it, but you're usually better off separating life insurance from investment and not trying to get both in the same package. And typically, if someone has these options, you're going to choose between employee life, which is probably term life, and whole life policy and not necessarily have both. So whole life, I'm not a huge fan of. I would prefer to have the regular life policy. But let's talk about another option. The other option is you could buy a term life policy on your own. And frequently, you can get much higher coverage amounts for less money. And usually in your age group, and given you said you're both healthy, you can get it would be like a 20-year term policy or a 30-year term policy, which basically means that the premium will be the same for 30 years. The coverage is, you know, usually stated like $500,000 or $1 million. And I remember when we got our first policies, we were in your age group, in our 30s. We had a daughter, and that's usually a good time to think about getting life insurance, because if you think about life insurance, the purpose of it is if something were to happen to you or whoever the insured is, does someone rely on their income? And if that income were to disappear, they would be disadvantaged. And that's really what the purpose of life insurance is. So when you say I decline child whole life, well, certainly it's whole life on top of it, but just life insurance in general for a child, this may sound not great, but if a child passes away, no one is relying on the income of that child. In fact, from a purely financial aspect, obviously disregarding any of the other aspects of losing a child, but purely from the financial aspects, the household is not going to be disadvantaged from a financial perspective of a child's passing. In fact, they may be having less money go out the door as a result. So I know that sounds very, you know, crass, but financially, insuring a child doesn't make sense. Because there is no income that child is producing. In fact, they just are creating expenses that would go away. I hate to talk about it that way, but that is kind of the way you need to think about it when it comes to, do I have life insurance for somebody or not? Are they providing income to the family? And if that person were to pass away, do you need life insurance? So for me, I don't provide income to my household. I don't need life insurance because I'm not providing anything. And I also don't really have any debts that would need to be covered and so forth. So that's kind of why you would have life insurance. But getting back to the point, you could go out and get your own term life policy. And like I said, when my wife and I both bought a term life policy and we were in our 30s, that was actually when we had our child, we were in our 30s. And at that point, we said, oh, we should get some life insurance because if something were to happen to one of us, you know, we were both working. Well, obviously, the household income would go down, or our daughter potentially would need daycare if the person continued to work, and all these things that would crop up if one of us passed away. And term life policies are so inexpensive, especially for somebody in their 30s. So it makes a lot of sense, especially if you have no health events or history or anything like that. It makes a lot of sense for people in their 30s, especially with children, to get a term life policy. And you can go on to places like Policy Genius, or I think I use SelectQuote. And they can, you know, price out multiple policies from high-rated firms, and you can compare and contrast them. But basically, I would be looking for something in a multiple of your salary, something maybe even as much as 10 times what your salary is, or just $1 million policy. If your salary is under $100,000, you're probably going to be able to get it, and it's going to be super cheap. Now, this is going back in time, but I recall our $1 million policies, we each had one, were less than $500 a year. So pretty cheap insurance. In fact, when my wife passed away, she still had a few years left in her term policy, and that policy actually paid out. And while we didn't really need the money necessarily, it certainly was beneficial. And she had a term at the time, she had a 20-year term policy, because I think what happened was our policies ended in our late 40s. I think we each had 20-year term policies to begin with. It might have been 15. So we might have gotten our insurance policies maybe in our 20s. Maybe it was in our 20s. And they were like 20-year policies. So in our mid-40s, we had to decide, do we want another term life policy, or do we want to just not have insurance from that point forward? We did not feel like we were financially independent. We felt like we were still relying on each other's income. So we decided to each get new policies. I think I got a 15-year policy and mine ended up lapsing because the 15 years ended at some point. And I didn't re-up it because at that point we didn't need it. And then she had a 20-year policy because she actually got better terms. Women typically get better terms than men do. And at the time, we got a 20-year policy, and I think she had maybe just a few years left in it when she passed away, and that policy paid out. It was not a $1 million policy. We had dropped the coverage amount. You know, it gets more expensive as time goes on, and we needed less money, potentially, if something were to happen to one of us. That's how I would think about the life piece of this question. If it's relatively inexpensive through work, you could decide, well, I will elect to have that, especially if it's only a few dollars a paycheck, but it's giving you $300,000 in coverage or something to that effect. Maybe it's worthwhile to do that and then add a term policy on your own outside of it. And then you've got the two together. The nice thing about getting your own term policy versus through work is if you were to leave work, that policy ends. Now, yes, you can usually extend it or buy it from the group insurer, but sometimes it's going to be more than what you could get on your own. So I kind of view it as getting my own on the outside and then maybe having some coverage through work. The other thing that you didn't mention, and some of these are available through employee benefit plans, for example, and one is something called prepaid legal. For instance, if you don't have a will, power of attorney, healthcare directive, any of those things, during your enrollment period, you could consider enrolling in prepaid legal, and frequently they will include the ability to have your estate documents drawn up. So you may decide, oh, well, for next year, I'm going to enroll in that. I'm going to have my estate documents drawn up by an attorney through that plan. And then once they're done, maybe the next year, you just cancel the prepaid. Sometimes it's a lot cheaper to just pay the prepaid legal through work, get your estate documents done, and then cancel it the following year. You will have to be enrolled for usually the full year. You usually can't say in the first month, I got my estate documents done, I'm going to cancel this plan. Usually you have to stay enrolled for the full term of the year. So that's something to think about if that's available. So that's how I would think about looking at your employer plan and all the options. So I think you're doing great with the long-term disability. I would look into the employee life and the voluntary spouse life. Personally, I probably would pass on the whole life and the spouse whole life, and certainly that you already declined the child whole life. I think those are not as advantageous. You're doing investing on your own directly. I'm not a believer of tying together life policies and investment, because whole life is effectively like a cash value life permanent policy where your premiums that you pay in build some cash value, but there's a lot of expenses in whole life. And generally, I feel like buy insurance for the insurance piece and invest separately. So buy term and invest separately. And certainly there's, in my opinion, and there isn't a reason to have both the regular life policy and the whole life policy through your employer. And so that's kind of my two cents. That's just how I would think about it. Again, it's not advice. You should do your own research and make your own determinations. But that's kind of how I would dissect what you were asking and how I would approach it if it were me. So I hope that was helpful. This is a relatively short episode, so maybe you can get this done during your workout or walk or whatever. Enjoy your summer, and I will be back next week with a new show. Thank you for listening to this week's show. Please click follow on your favorite podcast player or subscribe on YouTube to ensure you don't miss any future episodes. Also, please leave a rating and review for the show. This helps improve the ranking and enables other like-minded people find the content in their podcast players. If you would like me to answer a question on the show, please send it to mark@marksmoneymind.com and put podcast question in the subject line. Let me know your first name, or let me know if you would like to remain anonymous, and also your state of residence if you choose. I would also appreciate it if you would recommend this show to friends and family that might benefit from this content. See you next week on the Mark's Money Mind show. Until then, make some, save and invest, live on the rest. And now for the all-important disclaimer. This show is for education and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult the appropriate advisor or advisors before implementing anything you hear on this show or any other show for that matter. While I fully intend for everything on this show to be true and accurate at the time of each recording, occasionally errors may occur. So please do your own due diligence on anything discussed.